This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where customers who save by switching their home and car save nearly $800 on average. Quote at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary. Thanks for supporting the Fable and Folly Network. Here's another show we know you'll love.
Hey, we're the Looters.
Hey,
what's up?
Looters is a sci-fi western actual play podcast using the Stars Without Number system.
We're a group of friends getting into trouble all over the universe.
So come with us if you're into adventure.
A rocket flies out of one of these ships far behind you and crashes into the wall and blows up.
There's rockets?
It's Mario Kart.
Crazy.
Intrigue.
Can I hack into the body and maybe see if they have like a memory data bank in their brain or some shit like that that I can access?
That'll literally.
Devastating physical injury.
Just take cover.
Okay. She's a good pilot, everyone. Very good. She's very good.
And friendship.
Aww. New episodes of Looters out every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, we are here today with Evan Davis, the author of The Scars of Eliza Gray, and we're going to talk about the movies Get Out and Us, both by Jordan Peele. Get Out was kind of Evan's first foray into black horror, so I really wanted to talk to him about it because I don't come from that perspective. I grew up watching a lot of black horror, and I would really like to see what this movie looked like from the eyes of someone who was seeing this as somewhat sort of a fresh sort of thing. We talked in Evan's interview after his story about how this was his first foray into watching it, and he's watched Get Out and Us, and we talked briefly about what he thought about it. So make sure you go back and listen to The Scars of Eliza Gray and his interview if you haven't already. Barring that, there are going to be tons of spoilers for Get Out and Us in this interview, but we aren't going to spoil The Scars of Eliza Gray. So if you haven't listened to that episode, you're okay, no big deal. But if you haven't seen the movies and you don't want them spoiled, you should stop listening right now. All right, so Evan, you saw Get Out. Did you see it when it first came out, or did you wait a little while to see it?
I think it took me probably, I don't know, it wasn't in theaters anymore, so probably a few months. We did the classic like horror movie over at a friend's get together kind of setup.
Nice. Did you watch it with a mixed group of people, or was it mostly black people, or were you kind of like the only black person there?
I was the sole dot of brown in the room.
I think we have all been there.
Which really kind of added to the movie's effect.
Yeah. I was like, okay, so I'm really curious. I saw this at a movie theater.
Cool.
And I saw it at Alamo, which, if you aren't familiar with Alamo, it is a theater where they will kick you out if you're talking or laughing or on your phone. Well, I mean, you can laugh at like funny movies or whatever, but you know, if you're disturbing anyone's movie experience, they will kick you out, and they're not sorry about it. Like, you can YouTube it. There was this woman that called them once and was like, "You kicked me out of the movie because I was on my phone and this is not right." And they were like, "Screw you, lady. Don't ever come back."
God, I wish we had that here.
it is an excellent movie theater. You can eat, you can drink, like their alcoholic beverages. It's great. There's tables.
Oh my God, kicking.
It's perfect. I wish they were everywhere. Like, honestly, I think if I ever move away from Austin, that's the thing that I'm going to miss.
To miss the most.
You know, assuming I take my friends with me, but like the thing here that I would miss the most would be Alamo. Because I'm spoiled now. Like, I won't go watch a movie anywhere else. I did like last year. Mm-hmm. I won't wait because Alamo was sold out of a movie I wanted to watch, and I wanted to watch it quickly.
Sure.
So it's like this regular ass movie theater. I was so disappointed. Like, I was just grumpy the whole time.
Well, I mean, like, do they do like the reserve seating?
Yeah. So like you can buy your tickets online. You can say, "I want these seats." And
like they recline and they're like almost like household furniture. Like,
yeah. Well, some of the theaters recline, like some, especially if they are newly remodeled, their seats will recline. I cannot talk.
This sweet new feature where they
decline. No, so some of them recline, some of them don't. And some of them have different menu items. And like, they're not all 100% the same, but the thing that stays consistent is that you cannot talk during the movie. But so when I watched it, like, there were a bunch of white people there. The lady that was sitting next to me was black. So I was like, thank God. Like, when she sat down, I was like, yes, the ancestors are smiling upon me. But it was funny because, you know, like, you could, you know, there are all these white people in the theater. It's dark, so you can't really see them. But there were points in the movie, like, especially like that moment when he takes like that deer head or whatever and like kills that dude with it or beats him, you know, and
quite just like runs down the hallway.
Yeah, like you could hear, like, you could tell where all the black people in the theater were because we were all like,
yeah.
So, I mean, they're strict, but like, it was funny because like the black people in that movie were very vocal and like nobody was like reporting or anything, but you could tell like where the spots of black people were in the theater.
Anyway, just by sound.
just by sound alone. But so yeah, I couldn't see like anybody's reactions. I could just hear things, and the things that I heard were mostly from black people because white people were mostly silent during the movie. So I'm really curious about your experience in watching this with a whole bunch of white people, like how they reacted to it, especially knowing that you could see them, you could see their reactions, and like, you knew them, right? Like, these weren't complete strangers you were seeing.
No, these were friends. Yeah. No, it was actually kind of great because it, it played well. Cause like, so like the scene at the party that, you know, he doesn't know about and she doesn't know about, and all of a sudden a bunch of their like rich old white friends start showing up, and it's like this like cocktail backyard party, what have you, all like that vibe of like, what has the African-American experience been like for you, or like, what's what do you think of being black yourself,
and right, those questions. Yeah.
And like capital T, capital Q, those questions. The whole, my dad would have voted for Obama a third time. cringy, let's relate remarks. We didn't have to, this might be like a faulty memory thing, but I feel like we paused the movie at least once or twice.
Yeah.
To kind of like, at one of those parts or like one of those questions, they could like pause. Is that what it's like? And I go like, we don't need to interrupt the flow for a survey, but
right. Please hold right your now, questions until the end.
But there's a little bit of that, or like that's some white people shit that came up more than once. I don't know. We had fun with it, but
Y'all are still friends now?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
No, that shit ain't out of place. I promise.
But did you find like them asking those questions, like, let's ignore the fact that they were interrupting the movie to ask questions, because that's a whole nother thing.
It's a whole different
right. Let's just look at like their questions. Did you mind them asking those questions, or, you know, did you like they asked those questions? How did you feel about that?
Does being like kind of jaded count?
yes, I think we all know that feeling.
I get, so I'm all, I don't know. There's a lot of, okay, so one theme, and like, so I go into movies, especially ones like this, under the assumption that, and I think it's a fair one, that everything is intentional. Like any kind of like theme you observe, any symbolism you see, there's always that like death of the author interpretation by the audience thing. But I just assume that was intentionally put out there.
Yeah.
Peele plays wonderfully with like that ambiguity of I did good homework and I took a couple of notes on my
I'm so proud of you. You get an A+.
at that same party, one like the golfer guy says like you know, in his attempt to relate with Chris, is like, I knew Tiger, you know, and there's that kind of ambiguous like, okay, is this like a weird flex of like, hey, I hang out with famous people, or is it like I've got a black friend too, you know?
Right. yeah. But it was probably a little bit of both.
Right. that's like, that ambiguity is kind of what's, I don't know, I guess was mimicked in some of those questions too. So I'm 6'5", 6'4", somewhere around there, and I get asked at any kind of dinner party, any kind of whatever social event I go to that has, like, we'll say, like, an average age range of, like, you know, probably 50 plus, and a real low amount of melanin. Is it melanin? Yeah, it's melanin.
Yeah.
I get asked all the time if I play basketball, and it's this, like, my uncle actually gave me a sweet kind of riposte to that, to say that, no, I'm a horse jockey. But and I don't know. So it's this kind of like, is it an assumption because I'm darker skinned and tall? Is it just a tall thing? But it gets pretty tired pretty quickly. And it's,
yeah.
I don't know. When I hear those, or like, if something something affecting the Black community on the news,
yeah,
or any of those kind of like questions, I do get a pretty quick like crowd of eyes all looking at me going like, mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm not.
That's the thing about being like the Black friend,
right?
Yeah,
you did. Yeah. Oh my god,
is an interpreter, translator in a lot of ways. Like, does that really happen? Yes, it really.
I was gonna say, I don't know. I quickly, I guess, developed the attitude of like, guys, I don't want to be like an emissary on all of these questions, but yeah, I don't know. It happens frequently, and it's always this like. It's kind of like what the art dealer at the party says. It's like, they don't mean anything by it. I mean, given the nature of the horror movie, you know, that's maybe not exactly true. But in real life, yeah, they don't mean anything by it. But it's, have you ever heard of like store clerk syndrome?
No, you'll have to explain that for me.
This might be a total just kind of like Urban Dictionary thing, but it's basically, you know, working at retail at like a checkout counter or something. You know, you cat the first three people through that clerk's line, like, hey, how you doing? Hey, yeah, I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself? But what, like, by the time 4 PM rolls around and they've said hello to 600 people or what have you, and they've heard all of the lame jokes, all of the comments on the weather, all of the, I don't know, little kind of ice, like vanilla icebreakers. I don't know. It's kind of, I kind of fall into that. I find it hard to hold up enthusiasm when asked for my, I guess, I don't know, looked to for the answer on these things, if that makes sense,
yeah.
by my social circle and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for a long time, I didn't mind answering those questions, but I think a lot of that comes from the fact that I'm mixed. And so, you know, when you're raised as a biracial kid, and, you know, it's not necessarily anything your parents do, but the way society looks at you is, oh, you are the solution to racism, and you solve all of those things. You prove that we can all love one another, and, you know, you kind of get cast as this person who lives in this world in between and is responsible for fixing all of these problems, right?
Yeah, that shoveling of the responsibility too.
Yeah. And so, you know, getting asked those questions, you know, especially when I was younger, I actually enjoyed it, because it's like, oh, you know, I get to, you know, fulfill this role that I've been given by society, right? You know, I get to convince all these white people that Black people are not what you think they are. Like, we're actually pretty awesome, and you can hate us, and, you know, racism is stupid. And, you know, thinking, oh, well, they'll listen to me because I'm, you know, I'm half white. I'm one of them. They'll listen. Mm-hmm. And that, yeah, once I figured out that wasn't the case, it kind of got old. You know, I don't mind answering some questions.
Sure.
There are some questions that get asked a lot. But yeah, going back to the party and get out, you know, knowing after the fact that wasn't really the whole standard, oh, I see a Black person and I have questions about Black people, let me ask them, but more of an interview
and determining,
you know, whether or not this was a suitable person for them to inhabit.
Yeah.
There's a whole other light to that. And it made me wonder if, you know, because, like, when you really think about it, a lot of the questions that are asked, you know, some of them are asked because they're just curious. They just want to know, right? You know, they're not sure. But then a lot of them, I think, are asked, especially, you know, questions about, like, pop culture and things like that, mm-hmm. are asked because they want to inhabit that world.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to see that party as sort of an allegory from, you know, it's not just an interview to determine if he's a suitable person for them to, or body for them to inhabit, but also learning about Black culture so that they can inhabit that, because, you know, we're seen as the cool group of people. You know, people are always appropriating things from our culture. Mm-hmm. And when we do it, it's kind of looked down upon. But then as it sort of migrates to becoming something in more quote unquote popular culture,
sure,
it's something that's more acceptable for those kinds of people. What else did you think of that party scene?
Well, what came to mind just now was like the, I don't know, not just in like what they say and like the questions they ask and everything, but the, like the feeling of that, I don't know, like that kind of, it's just a splash. It's like a splash of either like milk in your coffee or sweetening your tea, whatever. Just it's enough to be there. Just the feeling of kind of like social awkwardness. And like the first thing that came to mind was that it's a super shortcut, but when Chris starts looking through his camera and kind of like trying to take pictures of the event, mm-hmm. and his frame settles on, and Chris's name is the only one I remember from the movie, but the dad, the girlfriend's dad.
Yeah, I can't remember his name either.
It looks like he's about to snap his shot, and like the dad just like spins around, points right at him, and just like, it was great. It was like about half a second after the finger goes out, all like six other faces in unison look at Chris, and there's just, I don't know, like the feeling of spotlight,
right,
that, I don't know, just kind of like those, I don't know, like the feelings that got captured but not necessarily in words, through dialogue, I thought was great.
So let's talk about the scene in the very beginning where they hit the deer.
Yeah. Oh, God. Thank you.
Sounds like you need no more prompting. Go right ahead and say what you want to say.
Oh, sorry. No, I mean, okay, kindly. No, there was so much about that scene that I remembered, because this is my, like I said, I watched it again recently for the second time. Mm-hmm. And it was it reminded me how much I loved it. Because what I forgot was like in the moments just before the deer hits, they start getting super playful. Like I think they start like a tickle fight or something.
Yeah.
And it's coming off the back of this like, I'm not looking forward to this trip. And like, you kind of feel the tension.
Yeah.
And then he's there to kind of, you know, relieve it and placate him. And just kind of, like, they start playing. And just as you're kind of like, I don't know, fully absorbed in that kind of playful, stress-free moment, bam, deer.
Yeah.
And you could label it a jump scare. I don't know. I liked the way it was done.
Yeah. I don't think it was meant to be a jump scare. I have a thing about jump scares. You know, it's, sure. I think a lot of times jump scares are used improperly. Sure. I don't think jump scares on their own are a bad thing. I think the way that it was employed in this scene was great, because it's, and I mean, I think this was done throughout the whole movie, you know, especially with, you know, not just having a scene where, you know, nothing is really happening. You know, things are kind of like, okay, everything's cool, this isn't a big deal. And then bam, something happens.
Yeah.
But also Jordan Peele's use of humor, you know, we're kind of laughing at something it kind of disarms you in a way. And then something horrific happens, and then he kind of follows that up with some humor, and you're like, oh, okay. I can, you know, like, I'm good. Like, you're not allowed to feel the horror for very long in some cases. And I think that he uses that timing really, really well to kind of keep you on your toes. Like, you don't know what to expect. Like, a lot of movies, you know, like, they have the music, and, you know, I'm not saying he doesn't do this in Get Out or Us, but in most horror movies, you have this music, and it's sort of, you know, increases in intensity, and you know, like, something's gonna happen.
Something's coming. You know?
Something's coming, and then something does happen, right? And so the movie is telegraphing its punches before it hits you, right? But I think that he intentionally uses humor and horror both to disarm you. You don't ever know which thing to expect. And I think a lot of the reason that he was doing that is, you know, not only because it makes a good movie, but
for sure.
Also the ending, if we think about the ending, you know, we see the police car come and we're like, oh great. He's about to get shot. Like, this is, you know, like that would have been the ending. And like, I don't think people would have been mad at that ending, because it's something that we would expect, right? Like, especially with everything that's been in the news lately, it's like, that's what we get. We might have been disappointed that he wasn't more creative with the ending, but we wouldn't have been disappointed in the ending itself. But then, like, he's disarmed you up until this whole point. And so, like, you forget that he's disarmed you. Like, he does it in such a way that you don't necessarily recognize it consciously. Mm-hmm. And then he does it again with the ending. And it's like, you know what? I should have seen that coming, because he's been doing this the entire movie, but he does it in such a way that you don't even notice.
Yeah.
Look back on it.
It's very subtle. I want to put like a pin in the deer scene and a potentially really bad analogy I have. with the ending thing, looked it up and found, like, did you know that there was an alternate ending?
Where he goes to jail.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I looked that up, and have you seen or like seen that with the commentary that he has to add?
Yeah, I did, but it's been a while, so I can't remember exactly what he said.
No, for it's totally cool. He basically he goes on to say that, you know, the original ending was Chris going to jail.
Yeah.
And you know, ending as Peele puts it, and it makes he says, you know, it only kind of makes sense that after what happens, for that to happen, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, she, Rose is her name. Yeah. Rose dies, and, you know, the cops show up. It looks the way it does. He goes to jail. In this system, he goes to jail.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But,
I mean, and really, like, him going to jail is, like, the best case scenario, like, yeah. In the real world. Like, I feel like there was probably about a 75% chance he would be shot and killed. And a 25% chance that he would go to jail. There was like a 0% chance that, you know, it'd be like, oh, okay, it was just self-defense, you're cool. You know?
Even in the, watching the clip, knowing that it's an alternate ending and everything, and knowing that there are three more minutes beyond what I'm at the point, the moment when, like, the cops approach and he stands up, I had a twinge in the back of my neck that was like, don't move so fast. But, So that you make a really good point. Going back really quick, just to the, I'm gonna unpop the pin that I put in the deer.
Go right ahead. We're gonna just jump around the whole time. It's gonna be great.
Talking about like how he juxtapose. You know, he has his background in comedy and humor.
Yeah.
I'm not like the biggest sports fan. I follow a couple, but primarily it's MMA. So I'm not sure how many of your listeners I'm about to lose. But
no one. There's nothing wrong with MMA.
One of the which actually, oh my god, brings me to the scene when we meet Jeremy. I remember I had to
see him die.
Oh geez, I think we all were, especially the way it happened. Cringy.
Yeah, but he's like the Joffrey of the whole cast there.
For sure. But one of the questions I had as an MMA fan for a while, like kind of while getting into it, was like, you know, it's all about, you know, Muay Thai versus boxing versus karate is how, like, UFC anyway started. And the question kind of becomes like, you know, what's the most handy or pivotal, like, art to incorporate into mixed martial arts?
Yeah.
And by and large, the kind of accepted most important base to have is wrestling, because you get to kind of like dictate where the fight takes place, whether it's on the
feet, interesting, yeah,
or on the ground, and like you start to incorporate like grappling and whatnot, or you keep it standing.
Right.
And now this bringing it full circle, that's kind of what Peele does. He has his background in comedy, and now he's employing horror, but he still has that comedy base to kind of like not only fall back on, but like use to manipulate your feelings as the audience.
Yeah.
And so as you're starting to get like really creeped out or really thrown, then he's very well practiced in hitting you with humor to kind of bring you back out of it.
Right.
In the same way that, like, you know, two guys who are throwing punches, if one of them is really good and has shown that at any point he can just duck down and take you to the ground and beat you up, all of a sudden you're not really sure how to defend the punches because he can duck down and take you down at any point.
Right.
And it just kind of like, I don't know, it adds that level of control, that level of manipulation.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, just the fact that he can, you know, use that humor that he's so well versed in to kind of either, you know, like calm you, soothe you, make you laugh, take you, bring you into a place of comfort, and then strip it away. Or vice versa. And the, God, just like the way that got used in the deer scene for the, you know, the well-handled jump scare, but also just the way the deer was handled. We find out later that it's a symbol for his mother, who was suffered a hit and run, and the whole, like, his whole conflict comes from, you know, he thought she was dead, turns out, and so he did nothing, but it turns out she was still alive.
Same thing.
The deer is hit, it's still alive. Have you ever seen, I've been telling people it's this movie, so I hope I've been right this whole time, The Last Exorcist?
Yeah, yeah.
That,
I think that's the name, like, I don't know. Like, it made me question myself. Like, I'm like, yeah, but wait a minute.
No, sure, it's like, I think the premise was, like, and this came out like maybe 9-10 years ago, but I think the premise was like, you know, it's a pair of exorcists, but they don't really actually think that exorcism works. They just kind of do it for the check, that whole thing. And then, of course, lo and behold, they come across an actual demon possession and need to do an actual exorcism. There's a scene somewhere in the middle where the girl who's possessed, they like show off how crazy she is. She takes the camera that's being used to document this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And for a stint, it becomes, I think the whole thing is POV film, supposed to be found footage. She takes the camera and like strips down naked and walks out to the barn. And like to this point, we've seen this like this family indoor outdoor cat that belongs to the family. And I think if I remember it, the cat's been kind of an asshole. And she takes the camera and just like, you know, you see her walking out to the barn, pushes the door open, walks across, and here's the cat just on some hay bales. And like, you know, it kind of zooms in, looks at it, and then you see like the perspective from the camera raise up. And basically, we view from the camera as she uses it to bash the cat to death.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I don't think I've seen that.
Ah, God, that, oh, I remember, that struck me, and I just kind of was like, I don't know. I think it was supposed to inspire dread, but all I got from it was just kind of gross and disgust.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, the first, when I remember seeing the movie for the first time, Get Out, and when, you know, the deer got hit, and it's kind of, you know, mooing or whatever the technical term for a deer sound is. I was like, oh God, are we going to see one of these like slow tortured, he puts it out of its misery, kind of gross shots.
Yeah.
But I don't know. They handled it just tastefully enough for you to kind of get the dread of, oh my God, it's still breathing.
Yeah.
But without the like straight up disgust and like repellent feelings of what Last Exorcist did.
Yeah. And I think that's really, like, a lot of people have, like, I don't watch movies where dogs die. Like, I cannot do it.
Right?
There is a site actually called Does the Dog Die?
I was about to mention that.
And, like, my husband was watching John Wick this weekend, and, like, I had no idea. I was just like, I was going to take a nap, and it was on, and I was like, okay, you know, I'll watch it. And the freaking dog dies, and I'm like, dang it!
Yep.
And so he started watching the second one. I was like, I'm not watching this unless I look first. Does the dog die? Like, he has a dog at the end of the first John Wick, and I'm like, if this dog dies, I'm not watching this movie. I'm going somewhere else.
Signing off.
I checked to make sure that the dog didn't die. So, you know, a lot of people have that. You know, it's funny, like, we can watch people's heads be bashed in, you know, we can watch animals cut people to pieces. But like, if an animal dies, you know, especially like if it's a deer or a cat or a dog, you know, something that we see is like a nice animal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, that turns a lot of people off. But I think the way that he handled it was, you know, it's interesting because it was meant to, like you said, be this sort of metaphor for what he went through with his mother.
Yeah.
And it was necessary. But in a lot of movies, like, you know, a dog dying is just to show like how cruel the bad guys are. And that wasn't the case here. And I think because it was to show his frame of mind, even though we didn't necessarily know it at the time, I think that's part of the reason that it felt like it was handled so tastefully.
Yeah. And,
you know, it wasn't just a cruel act for the sake of a cruel act to prove a point.
Amen.
So let's talk about the scene where, you know, give me the keys, Rose. Let me have the keys. And we see, you know, because up until this point, we're kind of, you know, at least for me, you know, I'm watching the movie and I'm like, you know, like she could have something to do with this. She could be clueless. Like I'm leaning towards she has something to do with this just because like I'm not trusting her. Like, you know, I'm like, this is a horror movie. Like she's not trustworthy. Like if it hadn't been a horror movie, then I might have been like, okay, you know, she may
not. Maybe they're in it together. Yeah.
Yeah. But because it was a horror movie, I kind of expected her to have something to do with it. But I felt like he did a really good job of really like towing that line between, does she have something to do with this? Does she not have something? Does her family even have anything to do with this? Or is it just these people that are coming over? Like, is it just her brother? Because her brother was like weird from like moment one.
We
knew he wasn't right at all.
I'm sure like when we were introduced to Jeremy, I even had the thought, I was like, I think he was like designed to come off as gross as possible.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. The actor did a great job.
Oh, absolutely. A
wonderful job. But did you realize that Rose was kind of in on this up until that moment? Or, you know, were you kind of like on the fence like I was? How were you feeling up until that moment?
I don't know. I mentioned before that I suffer from gullibility. It actually does not take much to fool me, unfortunately. So I was fully in, like, I don't know. I was paranoid of it, kind of like, don't break my heart, Rose.
Right. I was the same way. I was like, please don't be that white girl.
I was cautious, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to put my faith in you. You're in this with me, speaking of this. But there's the scene, like maybe like 3 minutes before the whole keys thing, where he's packing up and he sees like the little open closet door.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And he kind of like goes and like, so this part for me was actually the movie's absolute most tense, which I think is exactly where it should be. When he goes into the little cupboard and sees the pictures of her with all of like her past, past boyfriends. And the last two photos are the groundskeeper and the maid. And it's just like, oh.
Yeah, like we know. I forgot that happened before the whole keys thing. Yeah, you're right.
No, it's cool. But like, it leads to this like, oh, shit. And my favorite, like most kind of like, you know, toe curling, gripping the side of the couch moment was when he shuts the door, Rose goes like, hey, are you ready to go? And he makes that decision to keep up the charade and goes and was like, oh yeah, no, I'm good. You ready? And I don't know. There's something like, so when she does the whole like, you know, and he goes like, Rose, where are the keys? And she goes, you know, I can't give you these, and like holds up basically like, the jig is up. I felt, it was weird. I felt such a like release of tension. Because at least now he doesn't need to hold up the charade.
Yeah.
He's surrounded by four crazy people that want to do... He's surrounded by in a nest of predators, but all of a sudden there's weirdly less tension.
Yeah.
Just because he doesn't have to, like, try and fake and lie his way through it.
Right.
So I thought, oh my God, that brief moment, like, the window between him finding the photos and her doing the whole key thing... was the most tense like 5 minutes of the movie for me.
Yeah. Well, you know, like the thing is I feel like in most movies, you know, and even in this movie, like we could have questioned, like he could have overpowered her, right? He could have been like, she's crazy, I'm gonna lock her in this closet and I'm gonna go. Mm-hmm. You know? Like he could have easily done that. And you know, if we look at a lot of what happened in the rest of the movie, like, you know, he was very aggressive. Like he wasn't waiting around for anybody to save him. Like, he wasn't running up the stairs, you know, he wasn't doing any of the typical, you know, stuff, you know, tripping over stuff, at, you know, when he didn't need to be tripping, you know. So a lot of people, I think, might question why he didn't attack her or take, you know, an offensive instead of a defensive stance at that moment. But I think that that signified the reality that a lot of Black people live in, that, you know, we're kind of always pretending that it's okay. Like, it's okay that you're asking us these weird questions. It's okay that, you know, that we're in these awkward situations, that you've said something that you really shouldn't have said. And we're kind of like, eh, that's okay. You know,
sure.
You know, and it's, I feel like because we live in that reality on a day-to-day basis, like his character didn't even think to go on the offensive at that moment in time, because it's always a defensive thing for us. You know, we see white people doing something screwy and we're kind of like, eh, okay, you know, it's, you know, it's fine. You know, even though it's not fine, we, you know, we don't want to talk about it. We don't deal with it. It's fine. Let it go. Let's move on.
The in quotes kind of thing. Is fine.
Mm-hmm. And then it was just instinct for him to do that. And so we don't necessarily question the fact that he didn't go on the offensive in that moment.
That's an interesting angle.
Well, I didn't think of it until you said something about the photos before. So thank you for that. You gave me an opportunity to sound great. Thank you.
my pleasure. Yeah, I don't, on a story crafting or storytelling note, because I want to, I get, if, do you, okay, this question first, I'm very scattered. do you, where did the movie fall for you on like one to 10?
I'm going to say a 10. Like, I really, I'm reluctant to give it a 10, but it's only because I'm not a person who gives movies 10s.
Fair. All right. I guess so then I do have a couple little things that nag me.
Yeah, but, no, go share.
Like the last of like the really good are just like how he unfolds the plot. So like I guess like genre notes aside of like, you know, playing with horror and how well he like affects the scare, just the way he kind of foreshadows. And the way things make sense, like, I don't know, he places it in this awesome space of, I think I've used this word already, but like ambiguity, where it's the world doesn't really tell you what it's doing until the revelation later, but it just kind of shows and it just keeps doing its own, it exists as it is. But like the placement of what it does, it's perfectly ambiguous where, before you know what's actually going on, everything makes sense, question mark, but it's all kind of like eerie and just a little off and off-putting.
Yeah.
And then once you find out like the real meaning behind everything and the real motivations at work and the real allegiances and everything about the characters, everything still makes sense. But now it's in a whole new light. Right?
Yeah.
And like some of the best part, like with, you know, like the grandparents being put in the bodies of the groundskeeper and the maid, you know, beforehand it's, you know, the groundskeeper is just, he acts kind of weird and he's sprinting in the middle, which, oh my God, I'm so glad they included that in the trailer, like in the run up to the movie of the groundskeeper. But then it's like hinted at where, like, you know, his, you know, my father was like part of the Olympic track team and lost to a Black guy or something.
Yeah.
He never really let it down, lived it down.
No, he's like, I'm in a Black body now. I'm going to try to.
I got it.
That's all I needed. I needed a Black body to be able to do this. Yeah.
Sure. But it explains why he's like, it explains that weird, creepy, like, why is this already weird guy just sprinting at the middle of the night and hanging right turns like a Tron light cycle.
Yeah.
And then like the maid and both of them not understanding when Chris, you know, hits them with slang or modern day kind of lingo.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to snitch. Question mark. Right.
Yeah.
To rat on you. Oh,
yeah.
Tattletale.
Yeah.
What? Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. The one thing that kind of, the reveal of like what's actually been going on, because they play with like the hypnotism thing and I'm like, ooh, all right, we're going into some like mind palace Twilight Zone shit. This is great.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, there was something about the nature of like, oh, it's a brain transplant.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. That hit me.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
It suddenly came off a little corny.
Yeah.
And I felt like I was watching like a 1950s, 1960s horror plot that,
yeah.
I don't know. It's.
Yeah, no, I could totally see that. Yeah. That makes complete sense. It kind of followed because I've actually thought about this whole thing. Like, what if there were brain transplants?
Oh, sure.
Like, would, you know, personalities come with them? You know, because like all that stuff is stored in your brain, but then like you've got muscle memory too. So it's like, you know, so I've kind of played with that question a lot in the past. And so, you know, it wasn't super far-fetched for me. Like, it did definitely feel more like a throwback sort of thing. Because that's something that was scary to people, you know, like 40, 50 years ago. Right. Sure. And I mean, I think it's scary in a new way to us now because transplants are a real thing, not necessarily brain transplant, but we're transplanting things that theoretically we shouldn't be able to transplant. I mean, we can grow organs now and things like that. So it's scary in a bit of a different way.
Sure.
But yeah, I think it was handled very much like a retro sort of thing. I mean, I think the chair and even the TV, like the TV was, yeah, the TV was like 100 years old. I mean, it was an old TV. So I wonder how much of that was intentional.
Oh, well, I mean, like I have to, so like one of the like back to the awesome thing that he does is like, he has a theme or like he gets symbols that he then, that have like all of their great underlying meaning and everything. And then they remain so strong from the beginning through to the end. Right. So like his whole thing is like his conflict with his mother, like a hit and run. And what was he doing? He was sitting at home watching TV. Mm-hmm. He didn't move. Why? Because he didn't want to make it real. And lo and behold, the tragedy underlying that was that, you know, she could have survived. But so that's paralyzed him ever since. And so then when he's, you know, I mean, cut to, he's strapped to a chair in front of a TV with the head of a deer, you know, mounted, like a trophy mounted on the wall. And so, but now in a totally new context, but like the themes remain and like the symbols remain strong through the whole thing. And that's something he's really good at and maintains through to us even.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so let's talk really briefly about the end before we move on to talking about us.
Sure.
You know, we kind of mentioned that originally the ending was him going to jail, but the actual ending that we saw in movie theaters and the ending that ended up being part of the movie was his friend, the TSA agent, who's played by Lil Rel, and I can't remember his name in the movie. I only know his real name. I can't remember his, like, character's name.
Sure.
But you know, he comes up and, you know, like he saves the day, right? Like he was not letting us go. Like the police were laughing at him in the beginning, even like the black woman, you know, who, you know, we kind of thought, okay, well, you know, she might be down, like she might, you know, she might believe him. You know, she was playing him, like she was laughing at him. You know, so he had the police laughing at him, and you know, like nobody believed him. Everybody thought he was crazy, and he comes and he saves the day at the end. What did you think about that ending?
Oh my God. I fucking loved it.
Oh yeah. The movie theater loved it too. Like you could tell where every single black person in the theater was when that happened. We were like, oh!
Well, like once he says he's all like TSA, TS motherfucking A. Yeah. We handle shit. because like, I don't know, how many TSA jokes have you heard?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, but here he is suddenly like out there.
Right, the TSA agent saved the day.
But I don't know. But it was kind of that, like, you know, bait and switch that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
But now I guess in the other way, where, you know, it goes from like, you know, light and funny to sweep out the rug, and now we're into something really serious. But now the complete another way where it's a roller coaster all within like 15 seconds.
Oh yeah.
Where like he's, you know, he's got his hands on Rose's throat. He's finally like, you know, the groundskeeper was about to shoot him, turns around, shoots her, and then himself. And so it's all like, he's in danger. Oh my God, he got saved. Oh my God, Rose is still alive. Okay, he overpowered her. Oh shit, here are the cop lights. And
right.
So it's this up,
after
down.
All
up,
of
down.
That, yeah.
And then, yeah, and you think it's the final note because you're like, okay, I see how this ends. And then the door opens, TSA. I don't know. I liked that it was a light note to end on, but it still paid off the expectation.
And normally I like kind of darker endings to horror movies. But I think, you know, for me especially, like, because I see this movie as a black horror movie, like, I feel like Jordan Peele, he wrote this movie for us. Mm-hmm. Made it for us. Like, there are so many references throughout the movie, and, like, you know, it's just unflinching at some of the things that white people do. It's not engineered to make white people feel comfortable.
No.
Like a lot of movies are. Like, he made it unapologetically, right? Sure. And, you know, I felt like we needed that ending. You know, like, normally I would have been like, oh my God, that's such a cheesy ending. Like, any other movie, I would have been like, he should have just died. You know, because I like, like, for my horror movies, like, personally,
yeah,
I like, quote unquote, more realistic endings. Like, things don't end on a nice note all the time.
Yeah,
and
you don't get
to. And this better. Ending was, like, completely unrealistic. Like, really? Like, the TSA agent?
Right.
It makes no sense whatsoever, but it was the ending,
you know?
And I was so happy to see that, because, like, you know, up until this moment, like, I've been, you know, enjoying this movie, like, wow, like, he is really out here. Like, he is not pulling any punches. He's, you know, he's saying what he's got to say. And then the police show up and I'm like, oh, please, please just cut to black. Like, I don't want to see him get shot. Right. Like, right. That's what I was afraid of. I was like, yes, I'm here to see a horror movie, mm-hmm. but, like, I don't even need, like, real life horror.
Yeah,
leading into this, like, I was just praying it was gonna cut to black.
Well, and that's what
the guy steps out of the car and I'm like, oh yes.
Yes. Well, I mean, like, in the commentary thing, that's what he, when he's referring to, okay, I hope I'm not, like, misquoting him here, but, like, when he's referring to the original ending of it's the police that show up, mm-hmm. he calls it the movie's gut punch. And
yeah
101, that's what that would have kind of felt like.
Yeah.
You know, after all of the struggle, he's here at the end, and then, and you think he's gonna, no pun intended, you think he's gonna get out, and then, you know, wham, just shot to the liver and you're down.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because I agree. I don't necessarily like unerring or, like, you know, really kind of twisting the framework to make for a fairy tale, everyone lives happily ever after kind of ending.
Yeah.
I'd like a realistic one, but I also don't need. Oh, have you ever seen? Would you rather?
No.
I've
heard of it. I know what it is. Yeah, go ahead and explain it for the people who don't know.
It's a cheesy Netflix, like, thing. I don't know. It plays on that game of, like, you know, what, you know, would you rather A, do something, like, you know, cut off a finger, or B, have your mouth sewn shut, or something, like, something.
Yeah, two horrible things, but, you know.
Bingo.
You know.
And it's about this rich guy who brings together, I think it's like 8 or 10 people who really need money, and then kind of proceeds to murder most of them through this nightmare.
Of course he does, yeah.
Or rather, gets them to murder themselves or each other.
Right.
Through this nightmarish game. And then, so, like, and it does this thing where, like, you know, right up to the, they all die one by one, horrible ways, yada, yada. You get to the end, and this girl who you've been following as the protagonist through all of it makes a horrible decision, but she gets out of it, and she, you know, she sees the end. And it's all to get money to, like, the winnings to basically save her brother.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, spoilers, guys. She does it. She goes through this awful thing, spends all the money, gets home, finds out that her brother, I think, takes his own life.
Oh, damn.
And so it's like, I don't know, man. I take that as, like, a, like, horror kind of, like, gotcha. Never going to win anyway.
Yeah.
It almost feels like I take my ball and going home kind of move. So I don't know. Though I appreciate the fact that Peele kind of, like, for Get Out, leaves it on an uptick.
And I think I would have hated that ending in any other movie.
But I think with this political climate, yeah, and with everything that Black people as a whole have gone through, like, that movie was made for us, and we needed that ending. We needed to have that hope, even though, like, we're looking at things and where things, you know, seem really dismal now, and mm-hmm. you know, a lot of us can't see a hopeful mm-hmm. ending to any of this mm-hmm. because it probably won't happen in our lifetimes, right? Like, I think a lot of us have come to terms with that.
Take a while.
And but to see that hopeful ending, just I don't know, I can't describe it. Like, I was sitting in that movie theater, like, this is a good movie. Like, I'm not one that scares, right? Like, I cannot tell you a single movie or book or anything that has actually scared me where I've had to be like, oh, I need to leave the lights on, or I need to, you know, watch out for this or that. You know, like, I'm not. I don't get scared. But I like tension and I like suspense. And I definitely felt like there's a lot of tension and suspense in there. And, you know, like, there was dread, and like, it made me feel things like that. Yeah. I read a book, you know, I watch a movie, and it makes me feel things, but it doesn't necessarily linger to the point where, like, I feel like I need to leave lights on or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, with this movie, it functioned as a horror movie for me in the sense that, you know, I felt dread, and it was suspenseful, and I was worried about the character, and, you know, all of these things. And, you know, it was very creepy and eerie and, mm-hmm. you know, all of that. And then when the ending happened, I was like, this is a great movie. This is a happy movie. Yeah. You know, and it's like, I've never felt that way before about a horror movie. Like, when it ended happily, been like, oh yay, it's a happy ending for a horror movie. You know, it's like, I don't expect that out of a horror movie. I don't necessarily want that out of a horror movie, but I needed that.
Yeah, he hits you with enough horror and dread, and then balances that out with enough, like, happy, so that the net net gain is still in horror's corner.
Yeah.
Like, that end that kind of leaves, I don't know, it's an important last piece to leave.
But I think the horror heightens the happy moments, and the happy moments heighten the horror, and they play off of each other, and they're much more, what's the word I'm looking for? You feel them much more strongly.
Yeah,
because the two were kind of played off against each other. Yes, that's the word I'm looking for. Thank you. All right, so let's talk about Us.
Yeah.
I've only seen Us once.
Okay.
I saw it at the movie theater, so I might be a little rusty on some stuff.
Hey, it's cool. You and I are in the same boat then.
All right, cool. So for this movie, I kind of went in expecting, again, like, this is going to be a Black movie. Mm-hmm. And to me, it didn't feel like a Black movie. Like, there were certainly a lot of places where social commentary was incorporated and things like that. And I'm not saying this was a bad movie. Like, I really enjoyed the movie, but, like, in the previews and things, like, they were playing I Got Five on it and all this other stuff. Yeah, it's a Black movie, and then I get in there and it's not a real Black movie. So I was kind of disappointed.
Yeah. Okay.
In the movie for that reason, like, if you just look at the movie, like, it was a great movie. I want to watch it again. I will watch it again at some point when I have some time. But it wasn't a Black movie. And so I kind of left the theater feeling kind of like I was let down.
Okay.
In a way, because of that, like, you know, I tried to separate the parts of myself that was like, you know, is this objectively a good movie? And, you know, the parts of myself that were like wanting to see a Black movie.
For sure.
When I went into the theater, and like, I tried not to feel disappointed in any of it, mm-hmm. but like, that disappointment certainly overpowered a lot of the good feelings about the movie. And I'm wondering how you felt about it.
Well, I mean, like, it's that whole, like, the treatment of expectation that, I mean, it's kind of like if you're prepping yourself to get, like, a taste of, like, Sprite or iced tea, and then you drink milk.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
It's not that milk sucks. It's just, like, there's that initial shock of, like, what the hell?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. So in my, it kind of felt like it took, so I get in the positive thing, it remained very consistent with his style and Get Out, like from Get Out. We got it.
Yeah, for sure.
We got a lot of what we could expect from Get Out, but like it took everything and kind of on like all levels knocked it up a notch or two.
Yeah.
Both like the positive and some of like what I would kind of maybe criticize it for. And that's just so like from Get Out, I almost felt like the reveal was a little too big, and that's just for me personally. But like, so because it builds intrigue and suspense,
yeah,
and like that eerie sense of like something's not right,
yeah,
so well, and then when it explains what's at work or why you've been feeling that with the brain transplant thing, I was like, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe that went a little too big for me, but I can dig it. If they played more on like the hypnotism thing, I don't know. I don't know what I would do instead. But the brain transplant thing took it a little too. I disliked it less on the second viewing because yeah. I expected it. But I remember that caught me with Get Out, and so yeah. with Us, it did. Oh my God. The intrigue building that it did was even better.
Yeah.
I geek out so hard over the whole, like, you know, seeing duplicates and palindromes like everywhere. And the more coincidences that start to appear, the closer she gets. And I'm like, that concept on its own is so fucking fabulous, because it takes that it just in the nature of it has doubt, because are these coincidences a sign of danger? If you read them that way, are they a sign of danger, or are they just that? Are they just coincidences, these things
right
happen?
Right.
And like everything from like 11/11 make a wish, the Jeremiah 11/11 thing, the circle landing within a circle, all of that stuff, I'm like, but as a sign of some unknown duplicate danger getting ambiguously closer, I don't know. I thought that was great. But then in the same way of the explanation being too big, I don't know, man. The whole, they copied America in 1985 or something.
Yeah. And,
like, just a whole second country living off of rabbit. I was kind of like, whoa, excuse me, what?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, the premise is, whatever. the premises that he uses in each of the films are kind of far-fetched. You know, like, they're, you know, like, if somebody walked up to me and they're like, I'm going to make a movie about how they cloned America, I would have been like, no. Like, I don't want to watch that. But the execution of it is so good.
Yeah.
That it turns out, you know, it turns out great, which, you know, tells you that, like, you don't need, like, a super great or believable premise to mm-hmm. make a good movie.
Yeah, but the execution, oh my God. The execution from acting to, like I said, that suspense and overall just intrigue building. I can't, don't think I could, like, geek out or stress that enough. The intrigue built was so phenomenally well done that when they kind of popped the cork, I was like, oh, what? Because I don't know, I guess maybe back to that note about expectation, expected something like just as, I don't know, subtle but haunting, and then when it kind of comes off with this big, like, a real kind of like a firework boom of an explanation, I was like, oh, I'm not sure if it's just taking me a second to wrap my head around it, or if maybe that, like, the size and scope maybe was a mismatch. Especially, I don't know, I liked the idea of it being, what was the main, I'm going to be even worse with names on this one.
Adelaide.
Adelaide?
Main character?
Sure. So, Adelaide. And then Red was her duplicate, right?
Yeah, I think so. I can't
remember. So, I thought it was going to be, like, a personal haunting kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, that's great, because then who are you going to run to for help?
Right.
If it's just a you problem and you're running around going like, oh my God, someone, you know, I have someone that
I have a doppelganger. Yeah.
I have a doppelganger that's trying to kill me and my family.
Right.
You go to the cops. They're going to be sweet. 5150. Yeah. We're going to keep you from running and put you in a hold.
Yeah.
Oh, sweet. Now the rabbit's caught in a trap. But since it's like a nationwide thing, yeah. I was like, oh, okay. Well,
Like everybody's dealing with this. So she's not necessarily dealing with like a believability issue once they appear. Like her husband thinks she's crazy.
Exactly.
Early on. And she's like, you know, I had this thing happen to me and it was weird. And like, there's this thing going on. And he's like, it's okay. It's no big deal. We're just going to the beach. It's fine. You know, and, you know, like she needs to get past this whole traumatic thing that she had happen, which kind of makes me question early on, like, if she knew her, I'm just going to call them her tethers, right?
Yeah.
Her tether. If she knew that she was going to be coming for her, or, you know, if she thought that she would be giving her tether like an opportunity to come to her. If she went back to the beach or, you know, because once we see the end of the movie and we learn that she's really the one that was living in that sort of underground world and she took the girl's place, then, you know, it kind of makes you question like, okay, well, what was she really afraid of? Like she's, you know, she's gotten rid of her adversary, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, what makes her feel like, because that's not really a traumatic experience for her.
Right.
At that point, like that's the point that she got free. Like that's like the glow up for her life. Right.
Yeah.
So why is she so concerned?
So, okay. Question. It's going to be a two-parter. Did you anticipate that twist? And B, how'd you feel about it?
You know, honestly, like I did, but only because I watched Get Out and, you know, I've really kind of thought a lot about, I've talked to a lot of people about Get Out. Sure. I've been a guest on a lot of podcasts talking about Get Out. So I've had a lot of opportunity to think about that movie and the way Jordan Peele kind of thought about things. And, you know, obviously like we're theorizing about how he thinks about things, but just looking at the movie, like I don't know that it even would have occurred to me. I think that because of what happened in Get Out and because I'd been thinking about all of these things, that's what made me question whether or not she was actually the real one or not.
Sure. I don't know. I have to imagine that if you took like a took a poll or something or surveyed the entire audience, it would probably come up like 50-50. But I don't know, man. As soon as like I had that suspicion from the jump, of like, you know, they see each, you know, she sees herself as a little girl. I'm like, the first kind of like, you know, guess the twist, unfortunately, that the brain goes to for me anyway, is like, oh, you know, the doppelganger is the one that got out, or you know, they switched at birth or something. And so I don't know, there have been other stories that have been told that have kind of like a foreseeable twist.
Yeah.
That are able to kind of pull you away from that guessing game and then hit you with it anyway, so that it, even though you guessed it early on, it still affects you. And for some reason, that just didn't hit me with this one. I spent most of my time going like, please don't tell us that they got switched. Please don't tell us that they got switched. And then when it was like, she gives her explanation of, you know, for the audience, I'm the real one, you took my place. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah. they done did it.
yeah, they totally did it. And that's the weird thing. I think that a lot of the twists in this movie are telegraphed. You know, Get Out, a lot of those things just, you know, a lot of the punches weren't telegraphed.
Yeah.
But in this movie, they were, and I don't know how I feel about that, if I'm honest. I prefer to be surprised.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm like in that's kind of kneaded into the dough of horror, isn't it?
Yeah.
surprise.
I want to not see it coming because there are very few movies where I don't see it coming. Like I've watched a lot of movies. I've read a lot of books. Like I've written a lot of stuff. So it's like, I can see when writers are like laying the groundwork for something later. Like that's the downside to being a writer and to being someone into being someone who watches a lot of horror and, you know, basically like bathes themselves in all things horror.
The art of pulling back the curtain.
Yeah. Right. Like you can see all of the groundwork being laid. And so very few things are a surprise for you anymore. And so like most movies are disappointing to me in some way. Like I'll watch them, they're entertaining, but I don't love them. You know, I kind of watch them to pass the time. And just because I love horror, I very rarely am surprised.
Sure.
By things. And I felt like Get Out surprised me in a lot of ways, which was great. And I think part of it was because it was so different than anything else that had ever been done. But like having seen one movie by Jordan Peele and then watching another movie by him, it's kind of like, okay, I can see kind of like how he's laying the groundwork for things. So I was less surprised by things.
It just kind of, I don't think it would have occurred to me if you hadn't said that just now, but have you read any Dan Brown?
Yeah. I can't remember the names of them, like the popular ones.
Da Vinci Code.
Yeah. Angel, yeah. I've read both of those. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I remember hearing, and he gets shit all the time for like, oh, he's a hack. He does like it's trash, easy mystery. I read Da Vinci Code, did not feel that way. I thought it was
I didn't either.
I thought it was a sweet page turner. The twists and the action I thought were great. The characters and like their dynamics I thought were fun and awesome.
Yeah, I agree. I really liked the book. I was always confused why people were like, oh, he's not a great writer or whatever. I'm like,
yeah. So that
I mean, like his prose, like the way that he writes things is he's not a bad writer, but like he's not like Toni Morrison or most people aren't, so
you get to be Toni Morrison because most people aren't,
right? Exactly.
But like I think
like being disappointed in something like that seems like you're just looking for something to be mad about. But
I started to kind of see where the criticism came from though, after, because like I read Da Vinci Code, thought it was great. Mm-hmm. I read Lost Symbol, thought it was fun, thought it was great. Picked up Inferno and I was like, okay, well, shit, this is kind of Da Vinci Code in Italy. Just like,
I feel like all of his books are like a remix of the first one.
Yeah, I feel the joke I made a while ago was that it felt like he took, like he had Angels and Demons or Da Vinci Code and was all like, I've got this awesome story with this guy named Robert. He's going to have like a kick-ass female co-star, but they're never going to kiss or nothing. And then, where should I set it? Should it be Parrot? Nah. Should it be DC? Nah. Should it? You know what? I'm just gonna write it like six times and base it out of each spot.
Yeah.
And so I don't know, but like the criticism kind of becomes that it's very formulaic.
Yeah.
And
yeah, definitely I feel that way.
I don't know. Your mention of like I saw the punch is coming for us because I saw Get Out. I don't know. I hope it doesn't follow a similar track of like, you know, we saw this, you know, a new movie comes out called Unknown or something. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, well, I mean, we saw the same twists and the same structure that we got from Us and from Get Out. And I don't know. But he doesn't, I don't know. I hope he kind of like changes up the recipe.
Yeah. Me too. Like, I think he makes great films. Like, even though I saw a lot of the stuff coming, like, I was still entertained.
Yeah.
But again, you know, like, I'm one of those people where, like, I'll watch just about anything. Like, even though I know stuff is, because I know stuff is coming, like, so often, like, I would have nothing to watch or read if I was, you know, only looking for stuff that I would be totally surprised by. You know, like, there, I could probably count on one hand the number of movies and books I've watched or read in the last decade. Mm-hmm. That have been like, oh, I did not see that coming, you know?
That's kind of what makes him special, though, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Those setups can be so readable when they do work. It's, and I'm starting to wonder if it's in the reveal, because, like I said, there have been, I don't want to like spoil it for anyone who hasn't gone through it or plans to, but there's the video game Detroit Become Human. They set up, it'll make sense, trust me, but they set up a twist pretty early on, basically around, is this person or are they not an android? And they kind of play with that ambiguity. And he kind of, I don't know, at first it hit me with this like, oh God, please don't set up such a, I don't know, I guess foreseeable twist of, Baba, they were a robot all along.
Right.
But they do enough. And like Get Out kind of did, and what other, you know, successful twists can do are like, they set up, they give you the question and kind of give you enough to kind of go, oh, please don't pull that.
Yeah.
But then I don't know. They just kind of leave it there and then they go on and tell the story.
Yeah. Enough
to kind of pull you away from that guessing game.
Yeah.
And then in Detroit's case, it just kind of, the reveal just sort of happens. There's no lead up to it. There's no dun da da da. It's just, oh, by the way, here's that answer to that question from way back when. And it even though you would have seen it coming if you dwell on it, it happens like snappily enough, if that's a word, that you go like, oh, shit. Oh, what? Oh, my God. So I don't know. I think it does kind of still kind of come back to that telegraphing point that you made.
So overall, what did you think about Us compared to Get Out?
I don't know. It because with Get, like I said, it takes everything that Get Out does and then raises the notch on it. So the intrigue, I loved the intrigue and symbolism in Us more than in Get Out because it remains strong, but there's, God, man, that haunting, eerie feel of noticing coincidences, and that may or may not be the warning sign that, you know, your hunter is getting closer.
Right.
And just that, and the feeling that it's such a personal thing, like, and, you know, the I'm not sure if it's appropriate, but, like, you know, the gaslighting of, like, come on, you don't actually think that, do you? And so, like, the inherent doubt of that problem. Oh my God, I love that so much more in Us. But at the same time, what hit me as a letdown from Get Out, which again, like I said, is dampened from a second viewing, but what hit me as a letdown from Get Out is kind of like, you know, the same, if not more so, from Us. Because I don't know, this very personal, haunting, creepy, parallel play kind of thing turned out to be like, you know, we copied all of them. It was a government project that copied all of America, and I don't know, let me introduce like 10 billion possible plot holes and things to
right like, okay, like, first of all, like, how would you even do that? Why would you, like,
how would you do that? Why would you think that would work? You just up and abandoned it? That seems,
So many questions.
It introduces 10 billion questions and answers like three.
And that's the thing, is like, I felt like the ending to that movie, like, Get Out felt like a final thing. Like, we got to hear Chris's story, like, you know, from beginning to end, right?
Yeah.
You know, we were fulfilled by it. And with Us, I kind of felt like we got this story, and then at the end, there were just more questions.
Yeah.
And I didn't necessarily feel as satisfied.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm glad, you know, the family lived or whatever. And I thought, I actually like the fact that they, you know, that they switched, that the one that was living above ground was actually the tethered.
Cool.
Adelaide, you know, it, like, I liked that. I think I would have liked for it to been handled a little bit differently, just so it was more of a surprise. But again, like, I don't know how much of that was because I've watched Get Out and studied it so much that I kind of saw it coming.
Right.
You know, it could just very well be me and the way that the way that my brain works. You know, I don't know.
For sure.
It would be interesting to see how many people were kind of surprised by that twist. But I did enjoy it. And I did feel like it made me want to go back and watch it again, which in a lot of ways, like the whole twist with Rose being in on everything, and, you know, like that whole family being, you know, it makes you want to go back and watch from the beginning because everything looks different. If you go back and watch the movie, and I feel like Us has that too. If you go back to the beginning, everything looks different once you know that.
Oh my God. Yes. that was one of the things that hit me. I'm going to interrupt really quick. One of the things that hit me with this rewatch of Get Out was that, yeah, knowing from the start now, unambiguously, without a, mm-hmm. without a shadow of a doubt, that Rose is in on it, all of a sudden, all of the times that she intervenes and goes, what, are you crazy? Or, you yeah. think that I'm doing this? Okay. Or the, hey, let's go for a walk. All of a yeah. sudden, rather than like, oh, she's the supportive girlfriend.
She's so sinister.
She's the handler. She's the yeah. play creator. She's the manipulator. Yeah.
It's better on the second watch. And I think Us will be better on the second watch. Like I said, I haven't seen it. Again, okay. like I've seen Get Out. So I'm wondering if Us will be better on the second watch. Like I said, I think it's a great movie. I'm not disappointed in it. And I think the ending makes it rewatchable. Whereas a lot of movies, like, you watch them once, it's kind of like, okay, that was a good movie. But you mm-hmm. don't necessarily want to rewatch them. I think Peele makes movies that you want to watch again and again, because you're going to catch different things in them that you yeah. might not have caught before, especially because there's a reveal at some point in the movie that changes everything that happened previously.
It retrofits everything you've already seen. And so it's yeah. kind of this like, wait, what?
yeah.
That is super fair. And that is super true.
And I really like books and movies that do that, because again, like, I'm not super surprised by a lot of things. So being able to rewatch something and see different things makes a work of art more interesting.
Yeah.
For me, because things aren't really, like, you know, revealed to me in the way that they might be in an audience of non-writers. You know, I think a lot sure. of writers kind of have, they kind of deal with the same thing. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious to know, since Get Out was your first sort of experience with black horror, how did that make you feel? Like, when you were watching it, like, did you feel seen? Did you feel like it was made for you? How did it feel different to you than some of the other movies that you've seen?
God, that's a good question. And it's, I don't know, I want to just kind of like sit and think on that, but I don't want to just leave you in silence for too long, but it's...
That's okay. We can cut out the silence if we need to.
I guess, okay, here's what I feel like I can probably say, is that I'm of mixed race too. And I've lived in California since I was 8. And I mean, so I've had run-ins, but not what I'd call struggles. Does that yeah. make sense?
Yeah.
So like, I don't know, when I got into fights as a kid because I moved around a lot. And so that I still don't understand to this day, but that whole, like, you know, new kid in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
like struggle. You know, I had one kid try and, like, you know, throw a punch and call me a nigger. I don't know what it was. It felt like water off a duck's back. It was kind of this, like, it didn't hit me, probably yeah. because I haven't been hit with much before.
Yeah. And
it's just kind of this, like, is that, I don't know, you're saying that because you think it's supposed to hurt me. And because yeah. I can see that intention, it doesn't.
Yeah.
My interactions with police have been nothing but, I mean, I've been pulled over 3 times, I want to say, and it's all been very, I don't know, respectful and easy. There's like nothing above the usual amount of tension in a scenario like that. But always just, I don't know, I've been polite and it's worked. I've been respectful and it's worked. But I understand that's not the case everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I can't really, I would feel weird if I sat here and said that, Get Out, like, spoke for me, or it, you know, it represented me in that yeah. vein. Those on the front of, you know, those struggles. I will say that it hit that whole the social awkwardness of being the only dark dude at a party.
Yeah. For on sure.
The fucking head. Like, the amount of times I'll be sitting there and my girlfriend still hasn't tired of doing this occasionally, being like, you're the only black guy here. I'm like, I mean, yeah, I'd noticed.
Yeah, trust me.
Thanks for highlighting it.
I don't need the news bulletin.
the rolling the rolling banner along the yeah. Evan, you're the only dark guy here.
Yeah.
Thanks. I had noticed myself. Or, you know, like I said earlier, the whole being asked asked questions in those like party settings as the emissary or the one to explain how Black America feels. Right. I'm like, guys,
you're the one with the codex and you can
let me tap into the network real quick,
right?
You know, hold a finger to my temple and just
right. We just had a Black people meeting last week.
You know, handy you ask. We just discussed these.
Let me just bring up the meeting notes.
I don't know. It's this thing where, like, I personally haven't had, negative interactions with police, but I'm asked, kind of like it's assumed I have.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So in rewatching, Get Out last night, so like with the scene with the cop,
mm-hmm.
when he goes, can I see your license, and Chris, you can almost see him sigh, but yep. then he gets out his wallet and
right
says,
he's like, here we go. Yeah.
And he goes along with it, and it's just like a rote kind of like, okay, this is what you do, you comply. Yeah. don't escalate.
Right.
But Rose goes and just like,
she's
what?
Like, oh, hell no, Mark. We're not doing this. Hell,
she did everything but a Z-snap and was just like, what? I was driving. This is bullshit. Who's you?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know.
But then we find out she's doing that because she's like not wanting a paper trail.
Exactly. But in the moment, that comes back to like that movie's beautiful use of ambiguity of like, is she doing it because she's the white girlfriend who's right. like,
she's who down, can, yeah.
can totally talk to police like that? Or is it a, please don't let this lead back to us.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
And I remember my girlfriend, Amanda, she was sitting next to me and she was all like, I'd call him out on his bullshit too. And I just turned and was like, hey,
would you,
if we take a road trip and something like this happens, don't ever do that.
Right. Is your girlfriend white?
She is. She's okay. Greek and Italian, but not like the Southern ones that got dark skin. She sunburns easy. And
so you watched Get Out and you still have a white girlfriend.
thank you. Oh my God. Thank you for the reminder. That whole scene of like, I can't find the keys. There was, oh my God. There was probably like a week or two later, we were leaving a friend's house. We were walking down in the driveway and it was dark. And she goes like, I can't find my keys. And all of a sudden, I just felt super fucking defensive. And I was like, I felt ready to fight. And I was like, where is this coming from? And I felt an inherent distrust of her in that moment. There's all of that. But...
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
Kind of like, oh, okay. I want to share this other tidbit and we can get back to us. But you know how you said that you're not the type to get scared mm-hmm. from horror movies? And I'm almost the complete opposite. have you ever seen the Grudge?
Yeah.
So I think the type of horror that really gets my goat in that like visceral, I don't like this kind of way. Yeah. Are like Japanese psychological horror.
Oh yeah, me too. Those are the only ones that I've actually been like, okay, I'm a little creeped out right now.
they got their black belt in creep you the fuck out.
Yeah. And
oh my God, there's a scene from the first one where like she's up in her like high rise apartment or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and she gets a phone call from her buddy.
You're talking about the American version, right? Sorry.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I don't. Good God, I couldn't have handled that.
The Japanese version is great.
You know what? I will super take your word for it. But I'll probably give it a try someday. But he calls asking to be buzzed in or something, and she goes like, banter, unlocks the gate, and then all of a sudden there's a knock at her door. And mm-hmm. he's like, what?
Yeah, there's no way he could come up that fast.
Exactly. Looks through the peephole. It's him. And she says something witty into her phone, like, I don't know why you're pulling my leg if you were already here. Opens up the door, and it's to an empty hallway. And then she hears the, like,
Oh, yeah.
And, like, the lights start shutting out in the hallway.
Yeah.
But as I described as any rational adult would do, she slams the door, throws the phone to the ground, and hides in under the covers.
Yeah. Because no one's going to find you under the covers.
Oh, my God. I was like, lady, what are you doing? And
white people, man. It's white
that's
people.
What I'm saying.
Chris would not have done that. Chris would have ran out of there. The movie would have been over. Credits would have been rolling.
Oh, you damn it. But and she like she hides under the covers, and like the room gets dark or something, and like the lump rises at the end of the bed and starts like carpet charring. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Two problems. A, I don't know why the fuck she didn't start just kicking wild. Right? If it's under the, like, at least, I mean, either fight back
white
or run.
People.
And she, like, even worse, just stays frozen and slowly, like, rolls the covers back. She gets, like, and pulled under or something.
Yeah.
My point being, after seeing that scene in that movie, I slept in a sleeping bag on top of the covers for, like, a week and a half. And I felt so fucking proud of myself. I was like, you can't beat me if I'm in a bag. point, Evan. Sup. Suck it, ghost.
Wait, how old were you?
I was like 12.
Okay. Thank God. Like,
Dennis the Menace level tactics going.
I was like, I know you're younger than me, but I was wondering how much younger than me. I was like, please don't say you were like 20. Because that movie came out when I was like 18 or 19. So,
slick.
So I was having trouble like picturing like grown up. Sleeping bag and like you got the point.
I was a creative ass 12-year-old.
That's pretty awesome. I'm impressed. That was very clever. That was very clever of you. I like it.
Oh God. Can I just say how many people have bragged about that too?
And now you've bragged about it to the world.
Excellent. Let it be what I'm known for.
Thank you so much, Evan, for joining us today. It was a blast talking to you. God. I hope you have a wonderful day.
Hey, no, you too, Tanya. Thank you.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.